Hello, and welcome to another episode of my podcast, Stepping Up. My name is Sue Reed, and every week I provide a platform for people to tell their story of how they have faced and overcome a challenge in their life. Here is today's story.
Hi, so my guest today is Julie. Julie's from Pensacola, Florida. Julie is the founder of Divine Phoenix Rising, which empowers women to rise from the ashes of their lives to rediscover their inner divine phoenix. And Julie also has her own podcast, Be the Phoenix of Your Own Life, again, empowering women. The reason Julie's come to talk to us today, though, is about, she's going to talk about a subject that it's kind of a taboo subject. It's something that we never talk about. And it's to do with decisions that women sometimes have to make in their lives. Not easy decisions, not nice decisions, but sometimes for various reasons, it's something we just have to do. So Julie's here to talk about the abortions, two abortions that she had at the age of 18 years and how that came about. So welcome to the show, Julie. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you, Sue. It is absolutely my pleasure. I'm totally honored that you are having me.
Thank you. And it's great to have you here and to really talk about something which is so raw and such a vulnerable subject. So you were 18. Talk us through what happened.
So to preface that, I have almost 31 years of sobriety. So when this happened in my life, when these two incidences happened in my life, I was definitely deep into my disease of addiction and alcoholism. That is not an excuse, because there are women, friends of mine even, and other women that can't say that, oh, well, I did it because I was drinking. I was 18 and I was just the party girl. I had decided that I was grown and I'd left my family home, and I ended up back in my family home for a little bit. And I didn't even know I was pregnant the first time. Both times. I had no idea. And so all of a sudden I realized, wait a minute, there's something going on here. And so the first one, I went by myself. Both times I went by myself, which is traumatizing on its own, because you walk through the doors and you just know that everybody is just staring at you because they know what you're doing. And the whole lead up to it was pretty bad. And at that time I was staying at my parents' house. And I remember my mom made a comment and she asked me, she said, "Are you pregnant?" I was like, "What? Why would you ask me that? No, I'm not pregnant." And I had just terminated probably the week before that.
Right.
And I said, "Well, why would you ask me that?" She's like, "I buy all the feminine products for the house. You're not using them." And she said, "Your sister has her own." And so I told her what happened. And I will say that my mom and I have had multiple discussions about this. We've cleared the air. My mom's my best friend. And if anybody wants to come after my mom, they're going to have to go through me first. I always say that before I share what my mom says, because people are like, "Oh my God, how could she say that?" My mom looked at me and told me that she's like, "Oh my God, do you know that you're going to have to live with the guilt that you killed my first grandchild?"
Right. Yeah. But that was a shock reaction, wasn't it? I guess.
Absolutely. And that just spiraled me in further into my disease, because the guilt and the shame already was overwhelming. And then to hear that from my mom was just like, just stick the knife in and just twist it a little bit and then throw some salt in the wound just to make it even worse.
So may I ask,
and
why,
then the second time.
Yeah. I was going to say, how did you get into alcohol in the first place? What led up to that? Was that family?
You know, to be honest with you, I don't know. I remember.
Okay.
No, it's funny, because my mom and dad, they'd have a glass of wine at dinner. They were totally normal people. I remember at the age of 12, though, the first time I drank a half a bottle of wine.
God, that, and I should have cut you 12. Off.
And I think that part of it. No, and it's funny because I think that part of the reason that anybody drinks and uses is to cover up stuff, and mm-hmm. There's something going on inside, and you just don't want to feel. And when I started it, it was for fun. And then throughout different instances in my life, things that happened, then I used it because I didn't want to feel anymore.
Yeah.
I didn't want to feel the guilt. I didn't want to feel the shame. I didn't want to feel the grief. I didn't want to deal with anything. And so the second time I had left my house and I was traveling around the United States selling magazines door to door.
Right.
And ended up somewhere in North Carolina, realized I was pregnant again, and was like, oh, well, all righty then. So I terminated a second time. And when I tell people this story, it's funny, Sue, when I tell people this story, for years, I would never say anything. Like, I didn't say anything. I wouldn't talk about it because of the judgment.
Yeah.
The absolute, how could you do that? Why didn't you give your child up for adoption? Do you know how many people would kill to have a baby? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I never told anybody.
No.
And now going through my healing journey and having my podcast, when I started my podcast, I said, there's not going to be any subject off the table, which meant that I was going to have to disclose some things that I had packed away for years and years and years.
Because the thing is, you bury things inside you, don't you? And at the end of the day, they want to come out. They want to be released out into the world. You can't keep a secret forever. That's what I think. If you do, it will, you know, eat at you from the inside out, won't it?
Yeah, it's like having a little sliver. You know, when you first get a sliver, it just sits there. And then all of a sudden it just starts to fester and it festers and it festers. And eventually even the smallest, tiniest sliver has got to come out.
Definitely. Yeah.
And that wound has to be healed.
Yeah.
So it's been a journey. And I decided when I decided to have the episode on my podcast about going through that and wearing four pairs of shoes, because not only have I had two abortions, I gave my third child up for adoption.
Okay.
My middle son I raised as a single mom.
Right.
And I have a foster child.
Right.
So,
carry on.
So I've worn all four pairs of shoes.
So I was going to ask, the son you gave up for adoption, was that because you thought, I just can't terminate another baby? Was the guilt there that you thought
that
can't get rid of another baby? I need to, but I'm not in a position to keep it. So therefore I'm going to give the baby up for adoption.
Well, it was funny because when I got pregnant with my son, I was going to keep him. I was going to keep him. I was going to be a mom. I was going to do things right. And I kept him for 2 months.
Right.
And about a month into it, I knew that I couldn't do it.
Were you still drinking at this time?
I'd gotten sober just when I found out. I stopped drinking when I was 5 months pregnant.
Right.
So I was still in that just crappy thinking, that overwhelming guilt and shame. And so I thought, well, you know, I had to, you know, I hurt everybody by doing this. So this time I'm going to do it this way.
Mm.
But I couldn't.
Right.
And it was interesting. My dad was an airline pilot. And when he was getting ready to go on a trip, and it was probably a couple of days before I relinquished, and I remember him, I'd like have this vivid memory of him sitting in my living room holding my son. And he looks at me, he goes, "How could you do this to our family? Why would you give him away? If you knew this is what you were going to do, why didn't you just have an abortion?"
Oh, right.
And I'm sitting here thinking, wait, so mom told me all of this. And so I felt like just absolute shit because mom told me this. And now I have dad telling me this.
Mm. Yeah.
So I was in a no-win situation.
No.
Yeah, so I wasn't going to win.
You gave him up for adoption. And how old were you then?
I was just turning 21. I had just turned 21.
Okay. So what happened next then? So you must, at that point in time, two abortions, one son given up for adoption. What was your mental state like then?
When, and it's funny because I can, and another vivid memory is when the caseworker came and took my son and put him in the back seat of the car. And I can remember seeing her drive away with him, and I collapsed in the parking lot. I was useless. And it just drove me so deep into just, I don't want to feel. So if there was a drink, if there was a drug, if there was anything that would take me out of the pain, it went in my body. And I did that for about a year before I got sober. I got sober August 29th, 1989.
Okay.
So it was a year and a couple of weeks.
So what happened then? You must have hit the bottom, because I think we have to hit the bottom before we decide that we need to rise back up again. What made you make that decision then that I need to sort my life out?
So it was funny. I was in a bar. I was absolutely tore up, and I met this guy, and I asked him what he did. And he said that he was a cook at a treatment facility. Well, I had no idea what a treatment facility was. I thought it was like, you know, water treatment. So I'm thinking sewer. I was like, who cooks sewer? That's disgusting. But I thought, okay, well, everybody needs a job.
That's exactly, yeah. Someone's
so
got to do it.
Anyways, somebody's got to do it. But we started dating, and he asked me out to dinner, and I showed up at his apartment with a bottle of wine because, you know, that's what you do. That's being good. And I knocked on his door and I said, "Here, I brought you a bottle of wine." He looked at me with this look on his face, and he grabbed the bottle of wine, threw it out the second story window. And I was like, that was like a $30 bottle of wine. What are you doing? And he said, "Jules, this is clean and sober housing." I was like, "Oh, what's that?" And he said, "We're all in recovery here." And I was okay, what's that? The
worst thing you could have bought
him. And so he told me, right? And so he told me, and I said, he goes, "I told you I'm a cook at a treatment center." And I said, "Oh, I thought you meant like at a water treatment center. I didn't realize." So we dated for a while. He asked me to go to AA meetings. I told him, no, I'm not one of those people. I don't need to go to that meeting. I'm not one of those people. And then finally one night he asked me to go to a midnight candlelight meeting. And I was like, "Listen, if this is going to get you off of my back, and you will leave me alone about this. I will prove that I don't have a problem. I'll go to your stupid little meeting. Fine. And I went to the meeting and I'm listening to these people thinking, I'm not like that. Oh, I don't have a problem. I'm not like one of those people. And then the one of the last women who spoke, she started speaking, and Sue, it was my life. She started talking about my life. And I thought, holy shit, how does she know that? wait a minute. And it was like that. You get those nudges from the universe. Uh-huh. And it was just that God wink that went, hey, it's time.
Yeah.
And I burst into tears and they looked at me and they're like, do you want to share anything? And I'm like, hell no. I just think that I might have a problem. And that was August 29th, 1989. I did not drink after that.
Wow. So that meeting that guy in the bar probably saved your life at the end of the day, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd already tried to commit suicide twice by that point in time. And both times, one time I tried to cut my wrists, and it's funny because I still have a little tiny scar on my wrist. And when I did it, I was like, oh, this hurts. Never mind. And the second time I was going to take pills, but I didn't have enough. And so I just got sick and slept. But if I would have done it again, I would have succeeded.
Yeah. Yeah. But obviously you weren't meant to. You weren't meant to, which is why the universe sent somebody along to give you a little nudge.
Oh, yeah. I firmly believe that if we look back in our lives, and we look back in our lives and we look at it like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened to me. I can't believe that happened to me. It really puts us in that victim mentality. It puts us in that ability to just feel worse and worse and worse about ourselves.
Yeah.
But if you look back and try to see what it did for you and what happened after that and how your life evolved after that, I truly believe that everything happens for us.
Yeah.
And my mom asked me, I was a couple months ago, she said, you know, honey, would you go, if you had a magic wand and you could go back and change anything that you'd been through, what would you change? And at first my brain went like, oh, and then I thought about it and I thought, nothing. I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah.
Because if I change one thing, it's going to be the ripple effect.
Yeah.
And
you probably wouldn't have your son today, would you?
No. And it's funny because there's a movie called The Butterfly Effect with Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah.
And you go back and you change one thing and it changes so many other things. And then you're like, wait, I didn't want all that to change. I only wanted this thing to change. And no matter, I mean, I've lived on the streets, I've slept in alleyways and doorways, and, you know, I've been all over the country and done some things that I'm not proud of, but the lessons I gained from them, are people going to judge me? Absolutely. There's probably people that are going to listen to your podcast and think, oh my God, how could she do that? And that's okay. Until you've been in those shoes, you have no idea what those feet feel like.
No.
Ever.
No, you can't possibly know somebody else's life, can you? And I think everybody's got their own secrets. Everybody's got something that they don't want to come out in their life. So I personally don't think anybody should judge anybody because they, like you say, they haven't walked in their shoes. They don't know what their life's like. So did you find out what happened to the son you had adopted?
I did an open adoption. And because I kept him for 2 months, I'd made a scrapbook for him of the first 2 months of his life, all the pictures, all of that. And so I sent it to the adoption agency when he turned 18. And I thought, you know, I might hear from him, might not, who knows. Well, I'm sitting at my desk at work and my phone rings, and it just showed a preface for the area that I was in, Oregon at that time, and I saw a Washington phone number, and I answered the phone. I said, "This is Julie." And this voice said, "Julie Paulston?" I said, "Yep. This is Julie Paulston." I said, "Yes." "Mom, it's me. It's me. Oh my God. Mom, it's me. It's Brett. I'm so excited." And I lost it. I had written him a letter, and in it, I put all my contact information. And so I went home, and my ex-husband said, "What's going on?" And I said, "You're never going to guess who called me." And I told my son, Malcolm, he knew all about his brother. I never hid anything from him. And he said, "So are we going to plan a trip?" I said, "Yeah, we leave tomorrow." And so we drove up to Washington, which is about 2.5-3 hours away. And we drove down the street, and I could see him sitting on the porch. And as I'm pulling up, I had a convertible and my son was in the back seat and I had the top down. And as we pulled up, he leapt. I swear he leapt all the way from the porch to the curb in like one leap. And I'm trying to like park the car, and he's trying to pull Malcolm out of the back seat. Malcolm's crying, and I'm crying, and Brett's crying. And he's like, "I got my brother. I got my brother." And they're like hugging. And then he's like hugging me, and it was amazing. And he's now married, and he has a 5-year-old, my grandson. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm one of the blessed ones to have reconnected. There's a lot of birth moms out there that don't get that opportunity, or because it was a secret, they haven't ever told anybody that they have a child out in the world, which absolutely breaks my heart, because once again, they don't say anything because of the fear of judgment, and because, "Oh, you had a baby out of wedlock." And then, but then you turn around, and if you would have terminated it, so you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So,
But you know, in some circumstances, like the circumstances you were in, it would have been very difficult to have brought a child up anyway. And potentially he could have got taken away from you at some stage anyway, which would have been probably worse.
Yeah. And you know, it's looking, hindsight's always 20/20, right? Mm-hmm. You'd be like, "Oh, well, if I was, I would have not drank, and I wouldn't have done this, and I would have done that." But it's funny, when I released my podcast, when I recorded it, after I recorded it, I just went and sat on my couch for about an hour and journaled and cried, because it really was, okay, I've put this out here now. And I thought, it's so polarizing that people are either going to be accepting or they are going to walk away. And if you walk away, then you're not my people. Then you don't get the honor of being in my life. But the amount of women who've reached out to me in private messenger, and you know, those that know me that have my phone number have called me or texted me and said, "You know, Julie, I went through that." And I had one gal, it was 35 years ago. And she said, "You know, Julie," she said, "I've never told a soul."
Wow.
She said, "But I feel safe." And she said, "I don't feel as guilty anymore." Mm. And I think a lot of women don't talk about it, because when you're with your friends or you're around your family, if they don't know what's happened in your life, and say a news story comes on about it, and then they start talking about how horrible it is, and women like that are just, you know, wretched people, and they should go to jail for murdering a baby, and blah, 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 blah. Why would I say anything in front of these people? Because they've just shown me that they're going to tar and feather me and hang me up at the highest, you know, place, and just leave me there to die. They've shown me that I can't, that I'm not safe disclosing anything to them.
No. And all that does is all the women out there that have got the same secret, they just feel like they're alone, that they can't tell anybody, that, you know, almost that they're the only person in the world that's got that secret, and they have to keep it, which is terrible, because if they started talking about it and stood up and said, "Well, yeah, I'm not saying I did a good thing. I'm not saying it was right, but I did what I had to do, and I stand by my decision." And then I think if it was a lot more openly talked about, then maybe it would be more accepted. Because in some circumstances, nobody goes through that. No woman goes through that because, you know, I don't want a baby in my life. No one does that. They do it because there's a definite reason that they have to do that. And it's heartbreaking.
And it's, you know, you bring up a good point. Nobody does it because it's like, oh, well, hey, I think I'll just go have this done. And I think I'll just go have this. It's not like you're going to go get a lip injection or get Botox to take the wrinkles out between your eyes. This is a life-changing decision because I've also talked to women who have had the procedure done and then never been able to have children after that. And so the amount of guilt and shame and grief is just exponentially worse because then they're like, well, maybe that was my one shot at having a child.
And you blew it. And almost like it was a punishment that because I did this, then this.
Yep. And then you get the religious zealots that come after you and say, you know, well, this was God's way of punishing you. And I'm sorry, I can't live in a world where that's not the God of my understanding. No. That's not the being that created me and the butterflies and the dragonflies and each blade of grass. You can't tell me all my life that, you know, Jesus loves you this, you know, cause the Bible tells you so. And this is, it's all about love, but until you do this one thing,
that's right. Yeah. And then it's
and
not
then you
anymore.
Get smited and smote and, you know, you're going to burn in the fiery pits of hell. Mm. Well, you know, get on. I got a seat on the bus for you. Come on in.
So, yeah. So then you had your son, you found your other son, and then you fostered a girl or a boy?
A girl
so, this time. Okay.
Yeah. So my son, Malcolm, was quite the athlete in high school. And when he was 12 years old, he came home from a football game and he had this girl with him. And I'm thinking, why is there a girl in my house? And he said, Mom, this is my best friend and she needs some place to stay tonight. I'm like, okay, well, I need more. I don't have a problem with it, but I need to know more. Mm. And she's going to be sleeping where I can see her and you can be in your room. And
yeah.
We don't want any of that stuff going on. But she was a foster child and she had gotten into an argument with her foster parent. And the foster parent had told her that, you know, she could go where she wanted to go and do what she wanted to do, but she couldn't come home. And good luck.
All right.
So she spent the night and every time she ran away, she would run to my house.
Mm.
And I remember one time she was probably about 13 and she'd come to my house and the caseworker and her foster mom showed up at my door and they said, you know, if you don't tell Tori to come home, then we are going to charge you with custodial interference and you could lose your son.
What?
And so I was like, okay. And so when they got home from school, the caseworker was there and I said, Tori, I'm sorry, you have to go. And as soon as they left, I looked at my ex-husband and I said, she's going to come here. I'm going to call the caseworker. So I called the caseworker and she said, yeah, Julie, she's where she is. Nothing you can do. So I lost track of her for about 2-3 years and Malcolm had his 16th birthday and the doorbell rang and the door opened and I had an open door policy. I never locked my door. Kids could come in and out at any point in time. No one was ever turned away from my house.
Right.
So I opened the door and there's Tori standing there and I hadn't seen her in years. And she goes, Mom. And I said, tell me what's been happening. And she said, can we talk later? I said, absolutely. So the next day, everybody left and then Tori's still there. And I said, somebody coming to pick you up, honey, or do I need to drop you off someplace? She said, can we talk? And I said, of course we can. And she told me about the foster house she was in. I was her 8th and final foster home in the period of 5 years.
Gosh, poor girl.
And the home that she was in, they had a child that was the same age as her, a boy. And the father would tell her that if she wanted to take a shower, she had to leave the door open because he wanted to make sure that nothing would, quote unquote, happen to her.
Oh, really?
And yeah. So there was some seriously shady shit going on in that household. And so I called her caseworker and I said, listen, I don't care what you have to do. I want Tori in my house because she's going to run away again. And the caseworker said, Julie, I thought you would never ask. She goes, I've thought about you the last couple of years. I wanted to reach out, but I just didn't because I couldn't. And I said, perfect. She said, let me get the ball rolling. We can have Tori at your house in a couple of days. Well, the lady, her boss, wasn't real happy with Tori, wasn't really happy with her behavior, and said, well, they've got a child the same age. Well, that's going to be a no. And I told Tori, I said, listen, they've said no for now. I said, but I don't care if I have to go to the governor of the state of Oregon, I will get you in this house. And so I had to go up a couple of levels and I had to fight some people and I rattled some cages, but I didn't care because I wanted her to live with us. And so I eventually won and she came to live with us and she and her fiance have my 5-year-old granddaughter. So.
Oh, lovely.
Yep.
So beautiful ending to your story. And now you're doing your Divine Phoenix Rising. So how did that come about?
So it's funny because last year, and it's all now coming up to be the 1-year mark. I call it my the trifecta of unfortunate events. July 11th last year, as of what was it? 2 days ago, July 11th, I broke my wrist in 3 places.
Wow.
COVID, with what I did, I was an educator for a Fortune 500 company here in the States. And I traveled all over and I educated stylists. I've been a hairstylist for 32 years. And so I educated stylists and I loved my job. COVID, though, got me put in the house and my depression came roaring back with a vengeance. Wow. I made some decisions that were probably not the best decisions. I still stand by them, but they were not the best decisions as far as the company was concerned. So July 11th, I broke my wrist. August 27th, I lost my job.
Oh.
And then September 15th, Hurricane Sally came and my house was destroyed and I lost everything I owned.
Oh gosh, right.
And I had a choice in the moment to become very bitter or to do something better. And the universe brought me the right people into my life. And I knew from years ago that I wanted to be a motivational speaker. I knew that I wanted to share my story, but I was so comfortable in my life.
Yeah.
And I was so comfortable with my salary. I was comfortable with what I was doing, even though I kept getting those, I call them the calls from the universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, my dreams kept calling and I just put them into spiritual voicemail. You know, I'll get to it later. I'll get to it later.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that the universe gets to a point where it's like, listen, we're not messing around with you anymore. You are going to listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so things happen in your life to shake you up, to get you to listen and to figure out that I'm 54 years old. I don't have, you know, a gazillion years ahead of me. God willing, I'll have at least 50 more, but it's time.
Mm.
And so.
Because the universe is saying, well, you know, you didn't go through all that so you could sit on your ass for the rest of your life. You are here to tell your story. You're here to go and help other people in that position. So get out there and do it.
Right. And it's funny because when it first happened, everybody's like, oh, you should have the lotus because, you know, it blooms from the mud. And if people could see me, I have a huge phoenix in my background, but after a couple of people told me that, I was like, listen, do I look like I like mud? I mean, those that love the lotus, that's awesome for you. But I have a real fiery personality. And for me, especially like with Harry Potter, with the Phoenix, and just how many times you just keep rising from the ashes and you just, no matter what happens, you have a choice and you're going to rise to the degree that you rise determines how far you fly. And for me, the fire is not there to burn you. The fire is to burn everything that no longer serves you.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
And if I can help one woman understand that she is not alone, that what she has gone through is okay, and that they're enough exactly as they are, that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you look like, because you're always going to be too much for somebody. You're going to be too fat, too thin, too tall, too dark, too light, too whatever. You're going to be too much for the wrong person, but you're exactly what the right people need. So until you start living who you are and quit giving such a, just quit giving a shit about what people think about you.
Definitely. Yeah.
You'll find the people that will celebrate you and love you and honor you. And your journey just becomes this magical thing that it just takes over your life. And do I have bad days? Hell yeah, I have bad days. Mm. I have bad days where I don't even want to get, I call them Bridget Jones diary days, where I just want to sit in my bed, eat some ice cream and cry and feel sorry for myself.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I have those days. And then the next day I get up, I go to the gym and buck up, little camper. It's time to do something different today.
Yeah. Yeah. You've had your 5 minutes of feeling sorry for yourself. Now, get on with it. So if somebody's listening to this and thinking, I know what you're talking about, I need to get in touch with you, how would somebody contact you?
So the easiest way to find me is Facebook. I'm on Facebook, Instagram. I've started to delve into TikTok, but I do it just for fun. Facebook is the quickest and easiest way to find me. So, you know, I'm sure you'll have it in the show notes. And for those that are listening, show notes for these really cool things that we spend time writing everything out.
Nobody ever reads.
Read them, for the love of God, please read them. But the show notes, it'll have all my contact information.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, my last name is Paulston. My profile is public. There was a lot of angst about putting my profile public because I am a survivor of domestic violence. I mean, there's so many things that happened in my past, but that's not who I am anymore. And my purpose is to empower women. So I can't do that hiding. So my profile is public. My last name is Paulston. It's Paulston. You can find me on Facebook and you can find me on Instagram, and you're more than welcome to find me, friend me, follow me, whatever you need to do.
Brilliant. I shall put all the details in for you. And so before we finish off, is there any message that you want to leave listeners with?
Yes. So the biggest thing, and I say at the end of my podcast, is the next time you look in the mirror, look into your eyes and realize that the woman or man looking back at you is beautiful. Mm. And it doesn't matter if you're a man, you're beautiful too. Don't let those constraints get you, and understand that you are enough. You were born into this world enough. You are enough. You will always be enough. And you are so worthy. You are worthy of every single thing that you could possibly ever wish or dream for. And no matter what, you are loved, you are cherished, you are adored by so many people. And if you could see the light that shines from your eyes, you would never doubt your greatness again.
That's beautiful. Really beautiful. This has been such a beautiful story, so raw and so honest. So thank you so much for coming on. It's absolutely wonderful. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Sue. I appreciate it. Yeah, it still makes me sweat. I still tell that story and still go, ooh, look, having a hot flash. Okay, yeah. I don't think it'll ever get easier, but if it helps one person, then that's exactly what it was meant to do.
Definitely. Okay, well, thank you so much for being here, and good luck with everything in the future. I'm sure you're going to be brilliant.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to today's story. And as always, if you want to ensure you don't miss any future episodes, then please subscribe. And if you yourself have a story to tell, then please do get in touch with me. I'd love to hear from you. And until next week, take care of yourself, stay safe, and I will see you soon. Goodbye.